Welcome to Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal bringing you fiction, nonfiction, and other readings with a local connection. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interest of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and the opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. I'm Joanne, and today I will be reading from The Summer Club by Hannah McKinnon. This is episode 7. When she woke up, early light dappled them as gently as the memory of the night before, and then she realized where she was. Stretched beside her on the RV sofa was Flick, his eyes still closed with slumber. One arm rested across her. How she wanted to close her eyes and sink into him, but she couldn't. "Flick," she said, shaking him. "What time is it?" Flick stretched and looked around. "Oh, man! I've got to go." Dowsy rolled away from him and hopped up. All the things she said the night before were tumbling back, and she felt suddenly exposed in the light of the new day. Outside, the air was cold and the grass wet when she stepped down into the yard. She glanced around wearily, then back at Flick. "I'll see you later." "Wait," he said, closing the door quietly behind them. "What?" "We have to hurry." She did not want to get caught. Just as much, she did not want him looking at her like this, rumpled and exhausted. Flick did not seem bothered. He smiled. "That was nice last night." Dowsy stared back at him, a knot of nerves. "All we did was talk," she blurted out. "I know. I was there." Flick placed his hands very gently on either side of her face. Dowsy inhaled. Her eyes were large and brown, and despite the fear of being found out in her haggard appearance and her racing head, Dowsy felt her heart slow. When Flick Creevy pressed his lips to hers, she stilled. The yard quieted. Flick's lips were full and warm, and behind her closed eyes the sun burned. Dowsy kissed him back, and just like that, they parted. "Was that okay?" he asked. Unable to speak, Dowsy nodded. A bird erupted in song. Across the street, a door slammed and a car started. Dowsy turned. When she turned back, Flick Creevy was already sprinting across his yard. All morning at work, Lily stared. "You sure you're okay? You seem out of it today." "Just tired," Dowsy lied. She didn't want to tell Lily yet. It felt like a secret, made sweeter by keeping it to herself. She's managed to sneak back in her house undetected, and she wondered if Flick had too. At breakfast, her parents were so distracted trying to figure out plans for Adam that no one noticed how exhausted she looked. For once, her mother didn't nag her to eat more scrambled eggs or comment that she looked thin. All day, she kept her eyes peeled for Flick. When camp got out, she was wiped out, but the thought of seeing him boosted her, so she ran up to the clubhouse. She was so distracted by the replay in her head from the night before that when she entered the back door of the clubhouse, she walked straight into the pro shop without thinking. Vince popped up from behind a clothing rack. "There she is!" If he was surprised to see her, he recovered quickly. "Have you seen our new inventory? We just got a new delivery of golf attire." Dowsy froze. How was it that someone she used to spend so much time with, she could hardly barely look at? "I'm looking for my dad," she sputtered. "Once upon a time, you used to rush in and pour over every new shipment." Vince held out a peach-colored golf skirt on a hanger. Its ruffled edge rippled in the air between them. "You know, the team could really use you this season, if you change your mind." Dowsy stared wordlessly at the ruffled edge of the skirt. "Any chance you get you back in the game?" "My dad's waiting for me," she lied, turning on her heel. Dowsy rushed out the door, past her dad's office and around the corner. There, she propped herself up against the wall, heart thundering. She did not hear the sound of footfalls coming up behind her. "Hey!" A hand landed on her shoulder, and she reflexively Dowsy swatted away. She turned to see Flick. He held up both his hands. "Whoa, didn't mean to startle you." "Sorry," she gasped. "What's wrong?" She glanced over his shoulder at the prowl shop doorway. Thankfully, Vince had not come after. Nothing. I'm fine. Flick followed her gaze. You don't look fine, Darcy. What just happened? The concern in Flick's eyes was too much, just as what she told him last night was too much. Darcy, he pressed. Just mind your business, she snapped. The hurt in his eyes rooted her to the ground. What was it, he said, just after she told him she liked him? It doesn't always seem like it. Before he could say anything, Darcy pushed past him and through the front door. She didn't look back. She already knew the look on Flick Creevy's face, and it just made her cry harder. Next chapter, Ned. Things were missing at Mayhaven. It wasn't just the fishless pond, still waiting for a delivery of 200 koi that was delayed in North Carolina. It wasn't just the kayaks and the paddleboard from the beach. Nor was it his son missing from the office. That morning, Mosimo came down to Ned's office to inform him that liquor had disappeared from the bar. It was the second time in a matter of days. At first, I thought our inventory was off, but this morning there were more bottles missing from behind the bar. How much? Ned asked with dismay. 4 handles of Grey Goose and 3 magnums of Hendrick's. Ned covered his face with his hands. They've got expensive taste. The new member dinner was the next night, and the bar needed to be stocked. Do you have any idea who might have taken it? Mosimo shook his head. Perhaps it's a member. Perhaps some of the teens? It was betrayal, either way. If there's anything else missing, food from the pantry, cookware? More of the Blackstone silverware, and a complete setting, I'm afraid. Also, I need to talk to you about the Delancey wedding. The chef looked even more pained. Mosimo never complained about events. His elegance under pressure was something Ned cherished. For him to bring it up to Ned, it must be bad. Miss Delancey has changed the menu. Again. Again? Ned was dumbfounded. The wedding was in less than 2 weeks. But I just met with her. Mosimo pursed his lips. First, I designed a 5-course formal dinner. Then we switched to a New England clam bake of seafood, chowders, and steaks. Ned nodded. This was where he left off with the Delanceys, and everyone seemed happy. Now, there is a new theme, Shangri-La. Ned repeated the word, Shangri-La? Phoebe Delancey has requested a traditional Himalayan menu. Ned felt he had whiplash. A low throb began his temples, and he pressed his index finger there. And what comprises a traditional Himalayan menu? I had to do some research. Mosimo handed him a piece of paper. Ned put on his reading glasses and read aloud, yak, goat, and mutton. Mosimo said nothing. Ned put the list down. I see. He was all for themes and culture, but this was beyond. At their last coastal New England-themed meeting where American flags and lobster napkins reigned supreme, there was no mention of Shangri-La. It was unclear if Phoebe Delancey had ever traveled to Tibet, if she had even eaten yak, and where on earth the club could source that goat or mutton in coastal Massachusetts. Does Miss Delancey expect these specific meats? Simo shook his head. I doubt God knows what Miss Delancey expects, but since I have no experience with these dishes, I propose outsourcing to a catering company. That won't be necessary. Ned hopped to his feet. Catering was the biggest ticket item in any private event. If the catering were outsourced, the club would lose all revenue for food and drink. Ned understood this required yet another meeting with the Delancey woman. An emergency meeting. I will call Phoebe right now, before you go. Do you have a head count for the new member dinner tomorrow? He asked hopefully. 65, Mosimo replied. I'm guessing we need to order more liquor? Unless you'd like me to serve the champagne reserved for the Delancey wedding. Ned grimaced. I like your humor, chef. Mosimo did not smile. Neither did Ned. As he googled yak farms near me, Ned dialed Phoebe Delancey. It went straight to voicemail. The clock was ticking. He'd have to find a way to lure her out of Tibet and back to New England. His internal line rang again. "Good news," Jane said. "The board has scheduled a meeting to hear concerns about Adam. It's next Friday." Ned glanced at the calendar. Friday was not soon enough. "Thank you, Jane." Ned jotted it on the calendar and said silent prayer. To take his mind off of things, he wandered down the hall to the pro shop. It always cheered him. Vince was behind the counter signing in Neiman Shrive. "Good morning, Neiman," Ned said. Neiman grunted. "Well, it's morning. Don't know if I'd call it a good one." Ned wondered if word was traveling through the membership about the missing kayaks and liquor. He hoped not. Hopefully, a round of golf would cure that. "My knee tells me it's going to rain, but I'm not getting it replaced, no matter what the doc says," Neiman went on. Apparently, they were still talking about his morning and his knee. "Let's hope the weather and your knee cooperate so you play well today." Neiman scowled. "I always play well. If you got out of that fancy office, you'd see for yourself." The pro shop was not proving to be cheering. As soon as Neiman left, Benson waved him over. "Hey, boss. A new member reserved a tea time for a foursome this morning." He tipped the sign-in sheet toward Ned so he could read it. "Is this okay?" "Stan Crenshaw and three guests, 10 a.m. Ned groaned. New members were not invited to play the course until after their membership was formalized. That meant after dues were paid, and traditionally after the new member dinner. Vince could tell Ned wasn't happy. "Normally, I would have reminded Mr. Crenshaw of the rules, but he said he's bringing his brothers as well as a friend who are interested in joining. And I got to thinking, that could be three more memberships for you." Ned needed all the members he could get. "Do we know if he paid his dues yet?" If Adam were still working in the office, he'd be able to tell his father from memory. Vince had done his homework. "I called upstairs." Jane said, "No, not yet." Ned let his gaze travel to the window where the greenery outside called. How tired he was of being stuck inside, of the problems cluttering his desk and his mind. The board had outvoted Ned and green-lighted Stan Crenshaw as a new member. And now here was Stan, already breaking rules and barging in, powering up the hill to the club, probably behind the wheel of his garish RV, and dragging along relatives just as wonderful to boot. It would be so easy to say no to Stan Crenshaw. It would be so satisfying. But if what Stan represented was true, if Ned could secure more members, that would make the board happy. And if they were happy, they might be more sympathetic to Adam at the upcoming meeting. And maybe, just maybe, peace could be restored to Ned's house. Ned closed his eyes. Let Mr. Crenshaw play. On his way back to his office, he grabbed the Pilgrim box from the hallway. His day couldn't get much worse. The club needs a signature cocktail. Gin and tonics are classic. We can name it Bitsy's Flask. Marcy is still hogging the courts. When is someone going to deal with her? Since when is it okay to drive your convertible up to the golf paths? Was there a cardiac emergency on the fifth hole? I'm looking at your black Mercedes, Fibble 8. The woke agenda is taking over. I hear our club Pilgrim logo is at stake. That some bra burners want a female pilgrim. That some snowflakes want to cancel our pilgrim. What's next? A turkey? Ned took off his glasses and rubbed his eyes, just imagining the board discussing these comments would ignite. He read through a few more, but there were only one that caught his attention. People should feel safe here. The women are counting on you. Ned froze. He pulled open his desk drawer and found the one he saved. Yes, it was written in the same block print. Ned read it again, a feeling of dread settling within. This was different than a wedding menu themes. It was different than pushy blowhards barging in to play golf before dues were paid. Someone did not feel safe at May Haven. He took this, along with the former comment, and clipped them to his notes for the next boarding meeting. At the end of the day, there was some hope. Phoebe Delancey finally returned his urgent calls. No, she did not want mutton, goat, or yak on the meadow. Menu, whatever did he get that idea? She meant Himalayan spices. After being asked which spices she meant, there was a long pause and the menu returned swiftly to the New England clam bake. But there would be Tibetan flags around the new fish pond for photos. Shangri-La was still at the heart of her vision. The koi hatchery had also called. The main highways were still shut down from the hurricane, so it would be a few more days until they could update the delivery. The Delanceys might have to let that go. Honestly, there were worse things than a fishless pond at a wedding. Several times, Ned interrupted these calls and duties to trot down the hall to the pro shop. On none of those trips did he spy Stan Crenshaw or his guest. He wasn't sure what he expected to see, but it was an itch that needed scratching. On the third visit, Vince asked, "Would you like me to call you when they come off the course?" Just taking in the beautiful day as much as one can from the inside, he headed back to his office feeling sheepish. What was wrong with him? At the end of the day, he was on his way out when he heard a commotion coming from upstairs. The noise level coming from the bar and restaurant was akin to a sports bar on Super Bowl night. He needed to see what was going on. At the top of the stairs, Ned wished he hadn't. Every seat at the bar was taken. The TV was on, the music cranked, and jocular voices rose up over the top of it. Ned surveyed the crowd. Neiman Shribe sat at one end of the bar with his usual old fashion. Was that a smile on his face? Beside him was Bill Fryer and his wife, Elizabeth, their cheeks flushed and their wine glasses empty. They dined at the club regularly, but Ned had never seen them in the bar before. Then there was Dick Delancey. His mouth was hanging open like he was catching flies, a look of wild delight in his eyes as he hung on every word of the guy seated next to him. Ned couldn't see the face, but one look at his hulking backside and he knew Stan Crenshaw. Two other men seated to Stan's left were of similar build, the twin brothers, and beside them, the friend. Only one of the four wore collared shirts, two wore baseball hats, dress code violations, all. As Ned approached, Stan said something apparently so hilarious that everyone, including staid Elizabeth Fryer, threw her head back in laughter. Dick Delancey actually slapped the bar. Dick saw Ned first. "Have you met Stan, our new member? What a hoot!" "Stan is my new neighbor," Ned said. He offered his hand and Stan shook it. "How do you enjoy your round?" "Not bad," Stan said. Up close, Ned could see just how big and red-faced Stan really was, as were his brothers, who regarded him with the same vacant looks. "My brothers, Mikey and Joey," Stan nodded toward the twins, identical right down to the tattooed biceps and grunted greetings. "And that's our friend Tony." At least Tony stood up to shake hands. Ned stared at his feet. He'd worn flip-flops to golf in? "Stan is taking us bow hunting," Dick Delancey informed Ned of this like he'd been invited to a fox hunt at Balmoral by King Charles. "He's going to teach us how. Did you know Stan hunts?" "Why, yes, I did hear something about that," Ned said softly. "Scarecrows, I believe." "What?" Dick looked confused but moved on. "We'll have to rent a cabin somewhere. Make it a real men's weekend." "No cabin needed," Stan said. "I just bought an RV. Customized." Ned needed to get out of there. "What you drinking?" It was Stan asking. "Oh," Ned paused. He had not come up here for a drink. Still, Stan didn't know that. "Another time, thanks. Just wanted to say hello and welcome." Stan regarded him for a beat and then clapped him on the back roughly. "I owe you one, Birch." He looked around until he was sure he had everyone's attention. "We didn't exactly hit it off when I moved here. Me and Ned, there were a matter of wrong side of the door in someone's face." Stan relayed this with a delight that turned back to Ned. "The wife says I owe you a drink." Was he really sharing this embarrassing innocent incident with a group he just met? Yes, he was, because everyone looked uncomfortable until Stan laughed raucously, and they were all free to join in. "Sheep," Ned thought. "You don't owe me anything," Ned said. He almost meant it. At home, the kids were in their usual funks. Both he and Ingrid had worked late. In fact, Ingrid wasn't even home yet. There was nothing for dinner. If we don't eat soon, I'm going to die, Adam huffed, pacing around the kitchen. No one's going to die. Let's see what I can find. Hurry, Adam said, plopping into a kitchen chair dramatically. As much as he loathed how much the kids were on their phones, he was relieved when Adam distracted himself with a game. It was like still staring into the fridge when Ingrid burst through the front door. They're throwing me a party, she announced, tossing her purse on the counter and planting a kiss on Adam's head. Why would someone throw you a party? Adam asked, not looking up from his game. It isn't your birthday. No, it's not. It's better, Ingrid booked between her husband and son excitedly. It's party for the treehouse. Where's Darcy? Ned had to shut upstairs for her three times. Darcy came down with a look like she'd been yanked away from some very important business. Hi, honey, Ingrid said, looking happy to have a larger audience. But Darcy walked right past and pulled the fridge open. What's for dinner? Have a seat. I have news, Ingrid said excitedly, sitting down at the table. Ned followed. Darcy halted by her chair, sizing up her family like she'd been seated at the worst lunch table in the school cafeteria. Only Adam seemed to be interested in his mother's party. What's the treehouse again? Seriously? Ingrid stared back at them with an air of defeat, which was the emotion she expressed right before she slipped down the wax slide of anger. It's the big mansion on the hill overlooking Mayhaven Lake, the one that no realtor could sell. Darcy. Did it finally sell? Yes, Ingrid said, looking hopeful. Cool. Who sold it? Ingrid's excitement turned outrage. Your mother! That's incredible, Ned said, hopping up. We have to celebrate. As he bent to hug his wife, Ned glared over his shoulder at his kids in an attempt to rope them in some kind of adulation, but no one took the bait. This was the unsellable house, and your mother went and sold it. It's the biggest sale in the office in 5 years, Ingrid mumbled. Full-ass cash offer. That's why they're throwing me a party next week. And we will be there again. Ned looked pointedly at their kids. Right? Darcy and Adam looked less enthused. Right, Darcy said flatly. What is for dinner? Adam asked. Next chapter, Flick. How many times did he have to explain to his mother that guys did not wear suits to the club? Mom, it's not a funeral home. It's golf and tennis club. People don't dress like that. She was standing in the room holding a fancy garment bag between them. It's a new suit, and you look sharp. She didn't get it. How I look is like I don't belong. As soon as he saw her expression falter, Flick felt like an ass. Who was he kidding? He hadn't had a clue how people dressed at Mayhaven either, until after he worked there. Just look how he dressed for his interview that first day. I only want us to look nice, Josie said, shoving the garment bag in his closet with a huff. Maybe you'll find a funeral to wear this to. Maybe it'll be mine. I'm sorry, he called after her, but she was already stalking down the hall. To be fair, he was already worried enough about what she was wearing, but he knew better than to ask. Flick really did not want to go. It had already been a long day in the kitchen, and he'd spent it preparing food for the very thing he was attending tonight, the new member dinner. Outside of the menu, prime rib, lemon basil, buttermilk chicken, heirloom tomato burrata salad, he had no idea what to expect. Mosimo had teased him, telling Ricky and Wendy and the others, "Make it your best people. Mr. Flick is going to be dining with us this evening." In front of them, Flick laughed it off, but it was not lost on him how awkward it already was. He'd finally felt like one of them in the kitchen. He knew where the spices were, which knife to use for chopping vegetables, and which for slicing meat. He knew when to give Wendy a wide berth and just how much ribbing Ricky would take, depending on how the dining room was running. Just by looking at Mosimo, he knew when he could make a joke and when to keep his head down and his mouth shut. Being on the other side of the kitchen door was the members was terrifying. He hoped Spencer and Blaine and those guys wouldn't be there. He wasn't sure what to hope for when it came to Darcy. The last he had seen her was yesterday afternoon when she ran out of the pro shop like she'd seen a ghost. Right before she snapped his head off. Honestly, he gonna figure that girl out? Now, as he dressed for the dinner club, he studied himself in the mirror. Did he look different since leaving Queens? The same brown eyes with long eyelashes looked back at him now. Flick understood he was a good-looking kid, not because of arrogance, but by the silent messages from those around him, especially the girls. Still, today he looked different. One glaring detail was the blue button-down shirt his mother had brought him, along with the suit. She hadn't totally messed that up. He tucked it into a pair of khaki pants and shoved his feet into loafers he still had from his cousin's wedding. But they were too burnished, not weathered, and the leisure boat shoes way the kids at the club all seemed to wear, where the leather looks like it came from their little sister's pony saddle. Whatever, Flick couldn't be caught dead in boat shoes. These would have to do. To his relief, Stan had not entirely dressed like a mobster. Maybe he'd taken notes when he played at the club yesterday, because he had toned it down with a charcoal jacket and slacks. To be sure, it read a little like a limo driver, but better than the purple TV ad attire of his dry-cleaning past. Josie, however, was true to Josie. Flick had to give her props for that, at least. Her dress was short and tight, her lips painted, and her signature going out red. At least her dress was patterned with flowers and not a safari animal. When Flick kissed her cheek and told her she looked pretty, he meant it. He had to admit it. Mayhaven was right out of the movies that night. His mom and Stan went ahead in the Lambo, since it seated only two, which was fine with him because he was pretty sure Josie would have shrieked the roof off when they pulled in. The sun was low over the hills, casting the clubhouse in dizzying pink and peach hues. Flickering topiaries lined the walkway, and ropes of twinkle lights draped the upper decks. Music rippled softly through the French doors. "It's like a fairy tale," Josie breathed. When they walked through the double doors together, he paused beneath the chandelier, recalling the afternoon he first set foot in here looking for a job. How things had changed. They followed the music upstairs. The dining room was already crowded with cocktail swillers, as Mossimo called them, everyone decked out in their summer whites and navy. French-cut bouquets adorned each table, and Flick flashed back to Wendy complaining loudly as she tried to make room in the walk-in fridge for the flower arrangements. Until that day, Flick hadn't known how temperamental hydrangeas could be, the things he was learning here. His mother and Stan headed straight for the bar. There was no sign of the Birch family. Flick tried to smile as his mother introduced him again and again. Some of the members frowned, trying to place them. Each time, Flick rescued them. "Hi, Mrs. Standish. I work in the restaurant." "Hello, Mr. Goldman. We met on the course. I drive the beverage cart." Always the confusion gave way to relief, and Josie would glow with pride. "This is Flick. He's my son." Eventually, he escaped out to the deck. He was leaning over the railing when he felt someone sweep up behind him. "Imposter!" It was Wendy, dressed in black and white for evening service. She held a tray of champagne and laughed at his expression. "Look at you, all grown up and fancy now." It was hard to tell if she was teasing or being mean. It often was with Wendy. He reached for a flute of champagne. "No way, Junior, not on my watch." "Sorry," he said. How many times had Spencer and Blaine done the same thing to him? "Oh, grow a pair. I was joking." She waited while he took a flute and drank it. The champagne was sweet and dry, and he liked the way the bubbles rushed down his throat. "Want another?" "Really? Hurry up." He held his empty glass uncertainly. "Oh, just give it to me." When he swapped it for another, she winked. "Be sure and tip the servers, Junior." "Thanks, Wendy." It was then he saw Darcy, framed by the French doors. Flick sucked in his breath. In all the times he'd seen her that summer, it was mostly in her work uniform or denim shorts. Tonight, she wore her hair long and short white dress, really not much more than a slip. It was lovely and sexy at the same time, and it made him think of moonlight spilling. "You're here." Darcy did a rock shy twirl, looking absolutely adorable doing it. "I'm here. Look at you, Creevy." "Look at you," he raised the champagne glass, then thought before of it. "No way. How'd you get that?" She closed the distance between and grabbed his arm. "You're the liquor thief, aren't you?" It was a joke, but he glanced about nervous. "Easy. Not something a new member wants to be accused of on their debut night." But she thought it was hilarious. "Oh, come on. Can I have a sip?" "Another risk," he thought, as she tipped back his flute. What if Mr. Birdshaw? Maybe he shouldn't have taken Lenny up on their offers. It must have been the booze, because a crazy thought suddenly occurred to him. Josie would love Darcy. It was about to ask her if she wanted to meet his parents, but someone else had also noticed Darcy. "Birch!" Spencer Delancey stood on the opposite side of the deck with a handful of kids Flick didn't recognize. His heart sank as Darcy bubbled like the champagne they'd just thrown back. "Hey, Spencer! Who's he with?" Flick asked her glumly. Already he could feel her slipping away in their direction. "That's Shelley Kravitz. She's back from college for the summer. And her sister Tegan. I used to golf with Tegan." "Oh." Sure enough, Tegan noticed her at the same moment and waved her over. "Do you mind?" Darcy asked. "Go on," he said, trying to sound like he meant it. He looked away from Spence when Spencer raised his glass to Flick's direction. Dinner was like molasses. Flick didn't know anyone at their table, but at least his mother seemed to be having a grand time. She must have had a few glasses of something herself, because her cheeks were flushed pink and she laughed easily. But she held her own, telling everyone where they lived. "Oh, Maple! What a nice neighborhood, and where Flick could go to school. A junior? What colleges are you applying to?" And how excited she was to learn to play tennis. "Molly is good, but you will love the other pro, Dennis. He's amazing." All the while, Flick wondered what was going on in the kitchen without him. He pictured Ricky plating salads as quickly as Wendy could take them out. It was where he should be. During a long welcome speech, he couldn't help but sneak glances to where Darcy and her family sat. Like a kick in the balls, the Delanceys were seated with them. Another kick, Spencer had taken the seat right next to Darcy and kept turning to talk to her. Flick tried not to stare at the way their heads bowed in each other's directions, faces close. He told himself it was to hear better over the noisy crowd, but he knew at that proximity Spencer could smell her perfume. Flick was painfully aware how good it smelled. Once or twice she caught him staring, but she didn't wave or come over. At the point she laughed so loud at something Spencer had said, her voice carried all the way over to the table. By dessert, Flick had had enough. "Can we go soon?" he whispered to his mother. "What, aren't you having fun?" Her eyes had the glassy look of happiness mixed with wine, and she looked especially young in the candlelight. He didn't want to ruin this for her. "I've got a headache," he lied. "I've got my own car, remember?" She studied his face. "Thank you for coming tonight, baby. I know it's not your thing." What Flick wanted to tell her was that he'd tried, that it turned out the pretty girl wanted the pretty boy, that besides the girl, he had nothing to say to anyone in this room. He had dressed up and shown up, but it was much easier on the other side of the swinging kitchen doors for a guy like him. Maybe that was how it would always be. "Try to make it through dessert," Josie said. When dessert trays came out, Flick tried to make eye contact with Wendy. She was hustling, carrying a platter loaded with cakes and tiramisu in tiny crystal cups of sorbet. It must have weighed a ton. He was half tempted to stand up and offer to hold it for her when she arrived at his elbow. "Cake or sorbet?" she asked, straight face. He shook his head. "I'm good, thanks. Everything else was delicious, by the way." "Good." Wendy was a pro. She gave no indication they knew each other, let alone did this very job together. Flick felt a little bad as she moved on to Mrs. Evans, seated next to him. "What flavor sorbet do you have?" Mrs. Evans asked. "Raspberry," Wendy said. "You don't have lemon?" "No, ma'am, I'm sorry. You usually have lemon." Wendy smiled tightly and shifted the heavy tray. Not tonight, I'm afraid. How unfortunate. Irritation rippled through Flick. He wanted to tell Mrs. Evans to pick a dessert or shut up. He wanted to relieve Wendy of the tray, but he knew she'd kill him. I guess I'll have to settle for the raspberry, Mrs. Evans sighed and looked around the table like she was taking one for the team. Wendy was about to set the disappointing dish of raspberry sorbet in front of her when another member, who looked like he had a few too many, staggered past their table. Flick watched in alarm as he bumped into Wendy and kept going, but Wendy and the tray lurched forward. By some miracle, neither capsized, but the dish of sorbet slipped from her other hand and right onto Miss Evans' lap. Oh, Miss Evans cried, hopping up like it was molten lava. Oh, my pants! There was a rush of napkins offered and apologies uttered. I'm so sorry, Wendy cried, scooping up the cup with her free hand. They're ruined! Wasting no time, Josie leaned across the table. Wendy, do you have a club soda? Wendy disappeared into the kitchen and returned with soda and a fresh towel. Mrs. Evans was not interested. This is linen from Italy. Flick had no idea what that had to do with anything other than making Wendy feel worse. Luckily, his mother pressed on. Trust me, it works, Josie assured her. Flush. Flush it with soda, then blot it with the towel. Flick couldn't believe the entire table was left gaping at the woman flushing and blotting her pants. His eyes stayed on Wendy, who suddenly looked very small. It's working, Miss Evans proclaimed. Can I get you anything else? Wendy asked her timidly. I think you've done enough, Miss Evans snapped. As soon as Wendy left, she turned to the table. The help here is just awful this summer. Flick was about to stand up when his mother put a firm hand on his knee. The woman next to Mrs. Evans, whose name Flick had already forgotten, turned to Josie. You saved the night and the pants, Josie beamed, an old hotel industry trick from my years in New York. Ah, the woman said, so you worked in the hotel industry. Josie nodded. Domestic. Domestic. My father owns a chain of Hiltons, mostly international. She looked between Stan and Josie expectantly. Where are your properties? Flick sucked in his breath. Oh, no, nothing like that, Josie corrected her. To her credit, she even laughed. I worked in housekeeping. That's what I meant by domestic. Housekeeping? Yes, at the Wyndham Garden by LaGuardia. How interesting, the woman looked, ready to dive into her sorbet. That's when Stan spoke up. Nothing like working hard and raising a kid all on your own. She's an independent woman, this one. He put a meaty arm around Josie, and for the first time, Flick wanted to hug the man. He looked about for Wendy, hoping she wasn't too upset. That's when he noticed Darcy and Spencer's seats were both empty. You can go, her mother said, leaning in. Thanks for making it through dessert. Flick glanced around the dining room one more time. Yeah, I think I will. He pecked Josie's cheek. On the way out, Stan caught his arm. Hey, kid, you did good tonight. Made your mother happy. Flick had enjoyed absolutely nothing about the night, but Stan was all right. Outside, the night was a cool balm to how hot and uncomfortable he felt. His shoes hurt, and the neck of his collared shirt was choking him. He was unbuttoning it when he heard someone crying. Flick followed the sound to the side of the clubhouse. Underneath the upper decks, he saw a woman standing in the shadows. Wendy. Hey, he said, stepping toward her. You okay? Oh, not you, too, she sniffed and straightened. I'm fine, Flick. That wasn't your fault up there, he noticed a bottle of wine in her hand. Yeah, tell that to the Mrs. These pants are from Italy. She didn't have to be so nasty to me. Wendy took a swig of the wine and looked at him. How can you stand these people? He felt bad for Wendy, but that wasn't fair. They're not my people. But his or not, people were coming. Flick heard the voices before Wendy. Hide that, he said, nodding toward the bottle of wine. She stashed the bottle on the ground behind a rock, just as Darcy, her friend Tegan, Blaine, and Spencer rounded the corner of the clubhouse laughing. At first, they didn't even notice Wendy and Flick under the deck. But as they passed, Darcy turned. Flick! She started to come over, but hesitated as soon as she saw Wendy. Oh, sorry. Flick's heart sank with the realization. She thought she was interrupting him. All good, Wendy said flatly. She never liked the teenage members. Darcy paused, hanging back from the others. I was looking for you, she told Flick. Oh, yeah? No matter how much he wanted to, Flick couldn't let himself believe her. The way she acted around Spencer all night spoke louder. We're going down to the lake. Want to come? Flick stared back at her for a heartbeat. He thought he would say yes, but she'd blown him off all evening. No thanks, he willed himself to say. Okay. She looked almost disappointed. Flick watched her gaze between him and Wendy before she veered back to her friends. Guess I'll see ya. Yep, see ya. Flick stared after her until she disappeared into the darkness of the pines, bound for the lake. He wondered if she should go after her. He wondered if he should go home. But there was no time to do either. Someone else walked around the corner of the clubhouse. Wendy stepped back, and Flick heard the bottle of wine clatter. Who's there? Flick recognized Mr. Welter, one of the board members. He realized this looked bad. Hi, he said, stepping out in the light from under the deck. But Mr. Welter's eyes were on the ground, on the tipped-over wine bottle. Is that yours? He asked Wendy. Flick could almost feel Wendy's sharp intake of breath. They were screwed. Oh, that. I came out for some fresh air and saw it. Don't you work here? He asked, walking closer. What's your name again? She cleared her throat nervously. Wendy, I work in the kitchen. I thought so. He looked at Flick, then back at Wendy. You're not supposed to drink on the job, he said. Then, we've had a lot of alcohol go missing from the bar lately. I think perhaps we should go inside. Wendy began to sputter, and Flick could sense her panic. This was her only job, and all she talked about was her new apartment and her bills before he could think of his mother and their new membership on his own job. He muttered, it's mine. Excuse me, Mr. Welter said, looking at him for the first time. Wendy spun around to face him. Flick, don't! But he stepped forward into light where Mr. Welter could see him better. I'm Flick Creevy. I work here too. I took the wine. New chapter, Darcy. He was the first thing she noticed when she considered the crowd of members in the predictable summer outfits having their predictable conversations. Flick Creevy stole her gaze. He was outside on the deck, straight drive from where she stood in the dining room. Darcy found herself moving toward him before she even realized it. But he wasn't alone. He was talking with one of the servers, Wendy. Wendy was in her early 20s with curves as pronounced as her attitude. Darcy knew they worked together, but seeing them now made her wonder how closely. She paused in the doorway, waiting for him to notice her. When their eyes met, there was no mistake. He was glad to see her. They shared champagne and a few laughs, and Darcy couldn't help but notice there was something different about the way he was looking at her that night. Different in a way that made her feel like she belonged in that slinking dress she almost been too afraid to wear, just as she belonged next to him under a sky glowing as pink as her cheeks felt. It wasn't the champagne. But then Tegan, her old teammate from the golf team, showed up, along with her sister and with them, Spencer. Spencer, who had promised to talk to his father. When she crossed the deck to say hello to them, she realized too late Flick hadn't followed. Then her mother called her in for dinner, and Flick's table was nowhere near hers. But Spencer, well, he was seated right next to her. Darcy stole peeks at Flick's table. He looked so handsome, all dressed up. His mother and stepfather looked a little like fishes out of water, and she felt a pang of sympathy for them. Maybe she would go introduce herself, but then Spencer leaned in, started talking. To her disbelief, they talked all evening. Spencer told her he had gone to bat for Adam, mentioning to his dad that he was a good kid. Maybe that claim seemed a little overstated, since to her knowledge, Spencer barely knew Adam. But he seemed so genuine. And even more surprising, so interested in keeping the conversation going. All before telling her that her dress was unreal. Unreal. When she heard that, the rush was better than any champagne buzz. Later, when a few of them ditched dessert and headed out to the course with a bottle of Tito's that Spencer magically produced, Darcy couldn't miss out. She tried to get Flick's attention, but he was busy talking to his mother. And then she found him, all alone outside with Wendy. Wendy was crying, and there was a bottle of wine between the two of them, and Darcy didn't know what to make of it, but she knew what it looked like. I was looking for you, she told him. Oh, yeah? He looked past her at Spencer and Tegan and Blaine, who were already leaving her behind. And the look on his face made her feel like a door had been closed. Flick wasn't coming with them. He was busy doing whatever he was doing with Wendy. And Darcy felt like an idiot for standing there. So she'd taken off with the others, and they hung out down on the dock, dangling their feet in the water and passing the Tito's up and down the line. Spencer sat right next to her. Eventually, Blaine had to leave. Then Tegan and her sister did, too, leaving her alone under the dark sky with Spencer. It was everything she wanted since the start of summer, and now she had no idea what to do with it. Buzzed and overwhelmed, when Spencer leaned over and pressed his lips to hers, Darcy just didn't let him. She kissed him back. It was everything she dreamed of, happening right there on a starry summer night with the best-looking senior at school who had never even noticed her until the summer at Mayhaven. Lily would die. 2 weeks ago, Darcy would have too. But as Spencer Delancey slipped his tongue in her mouth, it was Flick she thought of. When Spencer ran his hand across the front of her chest, brushing one breast and then another, Darcy's breath caught. When he tried to lower her on the dock, she went with it. As Spencer moved over to her, Darcy looked up. The sky swirled and blurred, each point of light fading in and out of focus. "You wanted this," she told herself. But when Spencer slipped his hand up the skirt of her dress and the length of her legs, she sat up. "I'm sorry," she said, heart's pounding. "I can't." Spencer sat back on his haunches. "Can't or won't?" Darcy slipped her spaghetti strap back over her shoulder, feeling the heat between them instantly chill. "What's the difference?" He didn't say anything, just shook his head. "Whatever." Darcy felt like a fool, like the little girl Ashley Riley had called her at the party. "I've got to go," he said, standing. She rearranged her dress, wishing she could rearrange the last few minutes as easily. "Hey," she said, trying to salvage some small thing from the night. "Thanks again for talking to your father about Adam." "Who?" As they trudged back up the hill to the clubhouse, the scent of pine sharpened her nostrils, Darcy trailed a few paces behind. Spencer didn't wait for her. There was no text from Spencer the next morning or from Flick. It was everything she'd expected, but it still stung. It was Sunday, which meant no camp, no organic opportunity to run into either of them, and nothing to distract herself with. She weighed herself and saw she was up a pound. Her head throbbed from the Tito's and her stomach roiled, but she couldn't let herself eat breakfast. 2 diet pills later, she went for a run. It was scorching outside, and her body ached with effort as she ran down Maple and onto Woodside Drive. By the second mile, she barely had the energy to turn back and walk home. Throughout the afternoon, she checked her phone, and after a lunch of iceberg lettuce and a handful of tomatoes, she was starving by then. The scale again. When there was no change on either, Darcy threw her phone across the room. It hit the far wall with a deadening thud. She was almost disappointed when she picked it up and realized there wasn't a single scratch or dent. It was just kissing and touching, she told herself, recounting the details of the night before her 100th time. But then why did she feel so tired and used up? Sometime that afternoon, her mother banged on the door and poked her head in. God, Darcy wanted to lock. "Are you feeling okay?" Ingrid asked, her face clouded with the usual surplus of concern and suspicion. "You didn't come down for breakfast or lunch." "I ate lunch," Darcy insisted. "That tiny salad, is that all you've eaten today?" The woman was a criminal investigator. She hadn't even been in the kitchen when Darcy had made it. "Fine," Darcy said, hopping out of bed and whisking past her. "I'll eat." In the kitchen, she feigned making a turkey sandwich while Ingrid watched and tried to make small talk. She knew what her mother was doing. Well, Darcy could play that game, too. She took a big bite of the sandwich and then another. The texture was like sand and the weight of its lead sitting in the pouch of her cheek. When her mother was finally satisfied, left her alone. Darcy spit the mouthful into the trash bin and handed the rest to Fritzy. She waited until the dog consumed every crumb. "Good boy," Darcy whispered. pointing out a piece he dropped on the tile floor. Evidence was everything. Back in her room, she fell into a fitful sleep. She woke to her phone buzzing. It was just Lily. Tired of evading her, Darcy answered, but she didn't mention the vodka or Spencer or the dart. She may have been a fool, like life was a joke. What else was there to tell? Monday morning, it took everything to drag us off to work. God knew what people would be saying about her. Blaine had a big mouth, and even though it was clear he was dead to Spencer, people would talk. Darcy wasn't stupid. As the girl, it was all reflected badly on her. Spencer was just being a guy, blameless and untouchable. As for Flick, he made his choice. So when she charged into the clubhouse, stealing herself from the onslaught of whispers and looks, she was jolted by a different frenzied buzz among the counselors. Someone had been caught stealing from the bar. A new member. A kitchen worker. That new kid. What's his name? Flick Creevy. There's no way, she told Lily in hushed tones as they waited outside for the campus direct. He likes this job, and his parents just joined. He wouldn't upset his mom like that. Lily eyed her suspiciously. Do you have a thing for him you haven't told me about? Darcy scoffed. What? No. She barely mentioned Flick to Lily, not the text or the long talk in the golf cart or the night in the RV. None of it. There were a few times she started to, and even more times she wanted to, but something always stopped her. Like the diet pills, like the weight loss. That summer, Darcy needed to keep certain details to herself. It had become a mason jar full of summer insects, like the fireflies she used to collect on the clubhouse beach at night with her brother when they were little. Only these weren't fat, perky fireflies who jazzed up the night. These insects were different, fast and dangerous, with razor-sharp stingers. Even though it took all her concentration, she had to keep the lid on tight. If she let even just one go, they'd hurt everyone she cared about. But it was getting harder to keep things from her best friend. Lily was staring to look at her the same way her parents did, like she was holding something back from them and they need it. And now Lily was asking about Flick, which bothered her more than what happened with Spencer. Somehow, Darcy couldn't withstand much more, so maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing if she threw Lily a morsel, a tidbit, just to get her off her back. Spencer and I fooled around the other night, she blurted out. Lily's face fell. And you're just telling me now? She grabbed Darcy's hand and tugged her into the deck, out of earshot. The exact spot where Flick and Wendy had stood the other night. I'm sorry, Darcy said. I wanted to tell you, but I'm still trying to make sense of it. I don't even know where to start. What happened exactly? Are you guys a thing? Darcy laughed bitterly. No chance. He hasn't even looked at me today. Spencer was over by the picnic tables talking with other lifeguards without a care in the world. Ashley Riley was with them. When she looked over at them, Darcy shouted, Tell me everything, Lily insisted. Our family sat together at the party. At first, I thought he was just being polite in front of the adults, but he kept talking to me about Adam, about camp. Darcy paused. I know it sounds crazy, but he seemed really interested in me. Later, a bunch of us went down to the beach. Spencer and Blaine had a bottle of Tito's, and we shared it. I got pretty buzzed. Eventually, it was just the two of us left. And we kissed, and it felt nice at first, really nice. Then what? This was the part that embarrassed her the most. Even from her best friend. And went from kissing to groping fast. It became clear he wasn't interested in me as much as he was that. Darcy glanced around her warily. Campers were starting to trickle in. This was not the time. Lily was still staring at her in disbelief. Come here. She gave Darcy a long, hard hug. Boys suck, she said into her head. Tell me the rest later, but don't let him get in your head today. It's prime real estate. He can't afford the rent. Darcy hugged Lily back. It was a relief to share some of it, even if it was ugly, even if it was just the tip of the iceberg. As they collected their campus and headed to the courts, Darcy's worries turned to Flick. People would be quick to blame all the liquor thefts on him, which was so unfair, especially when she'd been with Tegan, Blaine, and Spencer, who had stolen a bottle of vodka. If Flick was even drinking that bottle of wine she'd seen that night, she was pretty sure it had been more to do with Wendy. Monday, were Flick's day off, but she found herself looking for him anyway. Unable to stand not knowing, she texted him. You okay? I heard about what happened Saturday night. There was no reply. She tried to focus on the kids through tennis lessons and a messy clay project at the craft barn. Finally, she and Spencer were thrown into one another's path. Darcy was helping her campers wash the clay off their hands at the outdoor spigot when he walked by with another guard. He looked right at her. Hey, no meaningful look. Not even a smile. It was about as personal as the weekly grocery store flyers that the postal lady shoved in their mailbox, addressed to current resident. Hey, she said back. She wouldn't give him the silent treatment, but she also wouldn't say his name. Spencer Delancey had stung her. By the time she checked her phone again, she had three texts, all from Flick. I'm fine. How about you? Looks like you had a fun Saturday night. Had fun? They were talking about him, not her. And no, she had not had fun. But reading his text buoyed her. Flick cared. She left Lily with the campers and went to find her dad, not even stopping to knock on his office door. Dad, I heard about Flick. Her father looked as unhappy as she did. Honey, you know I can't discuss employee issues with family. Dad, she sat on the couch. It's me. And Flick is a friend. Besides, I know you like him too. Just tell me, is he going to lose his job? Suddenly, she couldn't bear the thought of Mayhaven without Flick. Her father sighed and pushed his chair away from the desk. Honey, Flick admitted to it. To all of it? The kayaks, the silver, the missing alcohol? I don't believe that. To the wine, at least. I really can't discuss this with you. You know that. She had to tell him the truth. Dad, I was with a bunch of members Saturday night, and they stole alcohol, too. What? Her father looked so disappointed. But he needed to know, even if it got her in trouble, too. You were involved? Dad, I'm almost 17. Kids drink, but no, I didn't steal anything. I didn't realize they had until they were down at the beach. You have been listening to The Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Joanne. Thank you for listening.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you a Worcester Regional Transit Authority paratransit rider from Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westborough, or West Boylston? Did you know that you no longer have to call customer service to book your trips? You can now take advantage of our new online reservation system and book your trips online at any time. Call customer service at 508-791-9782. Or email paratransit@therta.com to set up your online account to begin scheduling your trips. Please note the online reservation system is an additional option for your convenience. you can still call customer service to book your trips.